First question is from Ananda Rupa Devadasi. Now that we are devotees, is it important to take care of our so-called material life, daily life duties? Is it important first have a secure background in family life, work, and after that we can engage in devotional service?
What if we never have a secure material life? What if we spend our lives trying to have a settled, secular, secure material life? We spend our whole life for that and maybe never get that. And then we've wasted our lives because the very purpose is to cultivate spiritual understanding, culture faith and devotion. So that should be the number one. First, we situate ourselves, adjust ourselves, and become Krishna conscious. Then after that, we can do anything and everything. And it will be good, it will be auspicious, and we'll have purpose and meaning. We'll know how to balance our material life once we are spiritually situated. So we give utmost importance to first becoming Krishna conscious. We may never have a secure and comfortable, well-adjusted material life. It may never happen according to our karma. Depending on your karma, whatever comes our way, that's what is due for us. It's fated already. And some of the Lord's greatest devotees are poor, poverty-stricken, live in poverty. And that's a blessing of the Lord upon them. So it depends on our fate and our fortune, our karma, what will happen to our material lives. We can't make that the priority. It has to be secondary. And we always keep it simple. Simple living, high thinking. Famous motto in Krishna conscious life. We can follow that, whoever we are, wherever we are. Whatever the material designation may be. But all importance to our spiritual selves. That's the life force of all of us. The most important thing. Okay?
Yes. Still her question. I heard first we need to know our ego. Just after that, we can dissolve it. Is it true?
I would say not true, because it takes an advanced soul to understand what is the ego, what is the mind, what are the senses, what is the intelligence, what is the soul, to discriminate between all these factors and things within us. Take some Vaishnavata, some spiritual culture, development, evolution. So we don't need to worry about that when we are practicing and on the path of bhakti. Everything's automatically achieved. The ego becomes purified, senses, the mind, the intelligence, everything becomes purified and well adjusted. So we don't have to make a separate endeavor for our egos. They'll automatically become purified or smashed or they'll become engaged in service purified, then become pure egos. And pure ego is, I'm a servant of Krishna, of Guru, of the Vaishnavas. That will automatically come through spiritual development. Okay, next.
Next question is from the morning Chaitanya Charitamrita reading. How do the yogis serve in Shanta Rasa?
Well, we can explain just a little for our viewers who are not familiar with Shanta Rasa. There's five types of rasas, of relationships with the Lord, and seven sub-rasas that also exist. And of the five is Shanta, the first, the nine Yogindras, who are the sons of Rishabdev, who is a partial incarnation of the Lord. He had 100 sons. One is Bharat, Bharat Varsha, who India is named after. And he had the nine Yogindras, and they were the emblem of spiritual perfection, and their service was to protect all the different inhabitants of the different universes, the demigods, the siddhas, the humans, all the different planes of existence. They could freely go and give their association, dwell with them, give advice, teach, and offer protection to everyone. And that was their service. They were associates. They are associates of the Lord. So, protectors of all the universes is their service to the Lord. And so many examples of Dasya Ras, great devotees of the Lord, like Hanuman, the greatest of all in Dasya Ras, and Sakya Rasa, the cowherd boys, the friends of Krishna, Vatsalya, Mother Jashoda, Devaki, Nanda Maharaj, Vasudev, and Madhurya Rasa is the example of the gopis, the paramour lovers of the Lord. So, in Shanta Rasa, always the nine Yogindras, Nava Yogindras, are mentioned as the perfect example, perfectly situated in transcendental consciousness, pure yogis, freely moving about and protecting everyone. Okay.
Next question is still from here. Why is it said that we are reading for the deities, like when we're reading the Vandanas or Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita?
Mm-hmm. Well, we can consider that service when we chant the Vandana, when we read the scriptures in front of the deities. That's seva. That's a type of service. And it's pleasurable for the deities. But we also know the deity is a merciful manifestation. They are revealing themselves, coming down into the deity form, spiritual substance, coming down and residing in the deity form, accepting our offerings, accepting our service, blessing us all with their holy darshan. So they're engaging us mercifully in service, giving us service responsibility. We have to make our offerings properly, on time, and do all the things that are necessary in puja service and archan service. So it's for the deity's pleasure, but it's their mercy upon us. We can see it that way. And for us, it's a spiritual practice. It might be archan, in the lines of archan, to worship the deity. But for the pure devotees, the Paramahamsa Vaishnavas, they are not engaged in archan, they're engaged in bhajan. It's bhajan worship. For them, it's a devotional, deep, personal experience, worshipping them, serving them, pleasing them. So we're humble student practitioners, and we're doing everything that's recommended, that's prescribed by our Guru Varga. In this way, making spiritual benefit. So, in that way, I'm answering this question.
Next question is from Lalita, from Derek's mother, Lalita. How to recognize the mother of Derek, Lalita. How to recognize the line between false humility and true humility in ourselves?
False humility is like when it's an act. Like being an actor or an actress performing, and it's not real, it's not genuine. Real humility is when it's coming from within and it's genuine, sincere. So, if we can be a little in tune with ourselves and our motives and consciousness, we try to be genuinely humble and not act. Better never to act, imitate. If you're not feeling humble, better just be quiet than act. Better to keep silent and make more endeavor to be humble, than to put on a show and to engage in, you know, some of these ridiculous outdoing each other things. Sometimes you see everyone trying to outdo each other with their humility. I don't see it so much, but you know. Imagine putting a straw in our teeth and going around begging for everyone's foot dust all the time, and praising everyone and self-deprecating ourselves. If it's not real and it's an act and a show, it's, you know, laughable. So just be sincere and humble and in a real way, everything is, everything is manifesting. Okay?
Next question is from her. How to overcome situation when someone offends you?
Well, first of all, we feel, and we should feel this, that we're not anyone so important, and we're nobody to offend. Who are we to be offended? we should think like that. I'm not so important, and if anyone does any kind of insult to me, we accept it with grace and try to see that this is coming to me for my benefit, and I should learn something from it and not take offense, because I'm not so significant, I'm not so important. And we can all consider this is a big learning curve for us. We are practitioners, and practice makes perfect. And if we are sincerely and genuinely under guidance of our guardians and the devotees, then we are progressing and going in an upward direction. Maybe sometimes we find it difficult, but we're going, you know, and experiencing in an upward direction, learning as we go along. So there's no need to feel hopeless or lost. This is a journey, and it's a journey of a lifetime, and maybe the next lifetime, and the next lifetime. But we want to keep progressing and have the faith that everything is coming for our good. Everything is favorable. We're developing and evolving as we go along, living and learning, maybe learning from our mistakes, or if we're very intelligent, learn from others' mistakes. We can learn from others' mistakes. Everything must be real and genuine, otherwise what's the point? We're wasting our precious time. Do we have any more questions? Okay.
It's an anonymous question. Do you live every day as your last? Is it possible and helpful to live with such mentality?
I wish I lived every day like it was the last day. That's something I'm striving for, hoping for. I keep it in my mind as a goal in my life. But no, I can't say I actually do it. We wouldn't waste our time. Every moment would be very precious and should be used for Krishna conscious development, pleasing the devotees, serving the Lord. That's what I'm striving for. But we have some good examples to follow. All our divine guardians, our predecessor acharyas, the Vaishnav saints and sadhus, and even in present day our own god brothers and god sisters, our present acharyas, we can see in some of them that mood, living every day like it's the last. So I think that's not a joke. It's something very genuine that comes from deep attachment to the Lord's lotus feet and comes from, it's a Vaishnav quality, one of the 16 qualities of a Vaishnava. So they don't waste their time, never, under all circumstances. Someone who doesn't waste their time is living life like it's the last moment, the last day. So I'm aspiring for that. I pray for that. Next.
I know that my seva is not so difficult. Whoever can do it. And also so much more people are more suitable. So why I am here? That's the question.
Mm-hmm. Well, I imagine this is someone living in the ashram and they should feel great fortune. This is a blessing upon them. They're here or maybe in another temple, engaged in service. This is their super benefit in life. This is a chance of a lifetime and great fortune and blessing to be engaged in the Lord's service. So as long as it has come to you by divine will, everything is designed and destined from above. So we can think whatever comes to us has come from the sanction of our Lord and our Guru and our Gauranga. We are grateful and we are mindful. So don't need to give up our service for someone else because we don't feel worthy. There may be someone more qualified for this, but this has come to me by the will of the Supreme, and happily accept it. And there are instances where, like, if you feel someone is better for a particular service, you can present that to the Guru, to the Guardian, Manager, that I feel this person is more suitable. We saw in Srila Sridhar Maharaj's pastimes when Saraswati Thakur Prabhupada wanted him to go to the West to preach, he felt himself not suitable because he can't mix with others of like no culture. He came from very high Brahmin culture, had some standard, and can't mix with ordinary people easily. It's not natural for him. And he also felt he couldn't understand the intonation of Westerners. So he recommended Bhakti Saranga Goswami Maharaj. Srila Bhakti Saranga Goswami Maharaj, that he is more fit. He can go, his English is perfect, he can understand, he can mix with everyone freely in a qualified, dignified way. So he recommended him for that. We saw later the whole Western world went to Srila Sridhar Maharaj anyway. And by the mercy of Srila Gurudev, he accepted all of us and so much nectar has come out from all the meetings with the Western devotees. All our holy books in English from Srila Sridhar Maharaj's talks all come from that. So that's a higher example. Coming from our Guru Varga, when those moments come that we need to know how to deal in our spiritual lives. When things come our way, we can remember these higher examples. We need to be real and true and try our best. It's not black and white. There's many gray areas, things that require consultation, advice from higher Vaishnavas, how to proceed in a proper way, doing things that are best rendered in our service lives. Always the option is there to consult and stay on the right track and do all the right things. Better that than we speculate in our own minds and not be so sure about what we're doing. Okay.
Next question is from Aur Inakshi here. You spoke about the importance of arati and kirtan. What to do if a person lives too far away and can't come to the temple for such programs?
You can do in your own home. Even if you have a picture of the deities, you can offer incense, flowers, water, food, fan, cloth. What you have to offer, offer that with your heart and soul, and make the best of your situation. And kirtan, we can also engage in kirtan in our own homes, even if we're alone. That would be more of a bhajan. Kirtan is generally understood to be done in a, performed in a congregation. But we can sing the Vaishnav songs and worship the Lord in picture form or Govardhan Shila or Gornitai or Radha Krishna Mahaprabhu. Srila Gurudev recommended the photo as being more ideal for devotee practitioners. Because a photo of, like, say, Navadvip deities or St. Petersburg deities, they already are being worshipped. They have their pujaris. And whatever we do is additional. We won't be neglecting them. But also there's importance on whatever you begin with, whatever you start. You should try to maintain that. Something maintainable, sustainable is recommended. So better not to start with more than you can do every day and not be able to maintain that. Start in a way that's maintainable and keep steady. And that will be best for us, for those devotees who are living far in remote corners of the world. Also, aside from kirtan and aratis, there's the online harikatha, audio, video, online classes, a lot of digital media full of spiritual substance available over the internet. Take advantage of that. We're doing this for these kind of devotees, really. Who's at home, who's living far away, don't have so much association. We're trying to produce all these things for these. type of devotees and friends and newcomers, sincerely seeking for necessary spiritual substance. So it's another thing to include all the digital media that is available from, most importantly, authentic sources, not bogus sources. We want to be careful which websites we are searching and reading, visiting, whose classes we're hearing from, and if they're in line and authentic sources, then we can listen happily. I cannot claim to be one of them, but I have my orders to be here doing this from my guardians. I'm trying to follow orders. And as a sister and a friend, I'm here speaking to everyone, not as an authority or anyone important or special, just as a humble, aspiring servitor, a friend, and a sister. So I consider myself fortunate, and I'm happy to try the best I can. Okay.
Next question is from Yuvati. When we're living in the temple or nearby, and our family wants us to participate more in their lives, like her sister is getting married and she wants some more help from her part, but we doesn't feel like we can do it sincerely with so much energy as they want, because we know it's kind of losing time.
Yes.
What can we do in these situations?
We can be polite and well-wishing, affectionate, and we compromise. Not compromising our spiritual ideals or practices, but maybe like a relative, like your sister's, demanding something too much of you, requiring too much, then give something instead of nothing. Try to meet her halfway. Oh, why don't you come have your honeymoon in Thailand? I'll meet you on the islands for a few days, instead of having to fly to Estonia for a wedding when you just were there with her. You were just there for her birthday. Now she's getting married. Why don't you think of some compromise, like, let's meet on Koh Phangan. I'll show you a nice place. Thailand's a great place for a honeymoon. So just be affectionate and give something, but be practical and try to come up with an intelligent solution. I just gave you my suggestion. It may not be the best, but I try to do that with family. They know not to ask too much of me, and they can understand my service and my boundaries and parameters. They have some idea. But I don't totally abandon them. Every 2 years or so, I visit them, try to give my attention, give them a little love, and it goes a long way. In time, they become happy. They know how much to expect. Maybe now in the beginning, your family members don't know so much. But through time they'll understand, hopefully. So, yeah, we're affectionate to everyone. And well-wishing to everyone. And try to be kind and understanding. And sure, it can be like an obligation to meet them halfway, to come up with some compromise, but it's better than nothing. And also through a good example and giving some kindness to them, that is, you're showing them a good example, and maybe one day they are potentially able to appreciate higher things in spiritual culture. Attraction may develop by seeing your good example. How are you so bright and effulgent, and you've learned so much, you're so humble, you're so tolerant, respectful. We'll see the good qualities within you, and that'll be a good example for them. So, everyone's a potential devotee. We try to remember that, even our own family members who may be very much submerged in material life. We make room for the possibility one day they will become Vaishnavas. So, be kind and do your best. Next.
Something, when the higher taste comes and you are not familiar with it, you may be afraid to change the old habits. What to do when you are not affected anymore? It feels like you're losing yourself.
Okay, read it again. You mean affected?
Yeah, I just looked this word. It's like when you feel that you are losing yourself, when you cannot be yourself because you have to give up old habits.
Well, old habits that are being given up are usually bad ones, right? Common sense, we would think whatever we are supposed to give up, it must be unfavorable. So that's not the real you. All your bad habits that you normally do, that you've developed in your life, that doesn't define you, and better to give it up. The real you is buried deep inside of you. That must emerge. That's a shining you. The real you is transcendental, spiritual, devotional. So whatever we're giving up, it's meant for our favorable Krishna conscious development. Maybe you don't know who you are, the real you. That needs to be unearthed, uncovered, and brought out. And some personal development is necessary for that. Give up, that's the first two practices of developing Krishna consciousness and surrender. Reject the unfavorable, accept the favorable. Accept what is favorable for you in your spiritual development. Reject what is unfavorable for you This is the surrendering process. And in this process, the real you will emerge, the servitor of Krishna, which is natural, wholesome, constitutionally perfect. It's really who we are. But that's buried hopelessly, covered by so many layers of ignorance, passion, and ego. So we're not afraid to give up bad habits. We are ready to give them up and try our best. And are hopeful it's good for us, it's favorable for us in our development. Okay?
Yes.
One more question?
You say that first you should become Krishna consciousness and then do whatever you want. But won't it take too much time? Maybe we fail to do so.
Doesn't take too much time. That's the best utilization of your time. So if you spend your whole life trying to become Krishna consciousness, nothing is wasted. Everything is achieved, and you've spent all your time and energy, your life, for the right thing. And even a little endeavor on this path is a great thing, and it can save you from the repeated cycle of birth and death. The Bhagavad Gita confirms this. So we jump in the name of Krishna. We have faith, we have confidence. Know this is the right thing and the best thing. Everything else is secondary. This is our priority in life. And even if we've made a little advancement, that is so much. It's so important. Nothing is lost or wasted in this endeavor. So we can be fearless and go forward with our full hearts and all our energy.